The Mitchell's Front Page Podcast is brought to you by Geelong Bank. Listen live on 94.7 The Pulse, Mondays and Tuesdays from 9 till 11.
Good morning, James.
Good morning, Mitchell. How are you?
Yeah, good, thank you. Thanks for being on the program. First of all, the Brownlow medal last night. I didn't watch one second of it, and that's not like me, but the red carpet part doesn't really interest me, and you know, you can follow the votes online. You don't necessarily have to watch it live, but Nat Fyfe, the winner from Fremantle, which a lot of people thought might happen.
That's right. He was certainly firmed as a favourite over the latter half of the season. It's one of those things that you can quite happily miss the whole thing and just tune in over the last 10 minutes and just see who's in front. And that's the way it goes. I actually have a long-standing tradition with some friends of mine where we sit around and have what we call a Cranlow dinner, where we eat Crown roast and drink Crown lager and do not watch the Brownlow. and such was the case last night. It was a fantastic affair. And we spent all night not watching the Brownlow but listening to the songs of Bruce Springsteen, who celebrated his 70th birthday yesterday.
Oh,
so
wow.
happy birthday to the boss.
Does Bruce have any connection to the Brownlow at all, or that just was a happy
coincidence? So. I do not believe so. Knowing that, I'm sure Gil McLaughlin is probably scrambling to try to get him in to play at the grand final. It's probably too late for that.
Yeah.
but Bruce Springsteen in the grand final would probably be a welcome addition compared to some musicians who have performed there in recent years.
The Loaf, for example. Look, the pundits were saying it would be joint between Dangerfield and Nat, but obviously Dangerfield didn't quite poll as well as people thought, even though he still did quite well overall.
Yeah, it's probably the case of this is what happens when you have really good players, lots of really good players on one team, they all tend to take votes of each other. Dangerfield, he's probably not that upset because he's already got a Brownlow. He could probably point at Tim Kelly for taking some votes off him in that first half of the season where the Cats went, I think, 12-1 towards the bye. And then, of course, we all know what happened after that. We jumped on what is now eventually called the Geelong roller coaster, where we went win-loss, 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 win-loss. And unfortunately, the last loss was Friday night.
Yeah, it was pretty tough, particularly to lose 2 out of 3 finals for a team that promised so much is disappointing. I saw social media that you were there on Friday night.
I was watching
home on the TV. Mm-hmm. What was the atmosphere like there on Friday night?
The atmosphere, quite frankly, was incredible. And I can't believe I'm going to say this as a Geelong supporter, but everyone, and I'm saying everyone, should go and see a Richmond versus anybody game at the MCG, ideally Richmond versus someone that hates Richmond, so that there's a big crowd, just to hear the noise the Richmond fans make when they do well and they score. And it is quite frankly incredible. I thought it was loud for Geelong versus Collingwood 2 weeks earlier, but it was even louder. Richmond playing in a final is one of the great experiences in football, and I'm kind of glad I was here to hear it.
And I saw that they turned off the lights and had flames going into the air at one point.
They did, yeah. That was a bit of pre-match stuff. It was kind of there's an interesting trend in pre-match entertainment, and I've seen it happen at games before where they don't. It's not so much about turning the lights; it's about turning off the lights and doing dramatic things with lights and spotlights and flame effects and that sort of thing. So that was actually pretty effective, but it kind of didn't really make any sense because we were all too far away and they didn't have anything on the big screen, so it was very hard to make out what was going on. But it certainly looked impressive.
So closer to home, what's happening in Surf Coast Shire?
Yeah, closer to home. Some of your listeners may have noticed or may have been slightly inconvenienced by Friday's climate strike. But I guess that's the point of a strike, isn't it? To sort of inconvenience people so that you get their attention. Somewhere I've heard estimates of anywhere between 1,500 to 3,000 people most of them kids marching through the streets of Central Geelong with various amusing placards. So we'll have coverage of that. And also quite a few photos as well.
Was there a climate strike down in... Because I was talking to Darren Cheeseman earlier and I was asking, was there a climate strike in South Bowen or was it just the Geelong one and everyone from right around the area came to the Geelong City Council?
Just a Geelong one, as far as I know. If there were any climate strikes and anyone out there that happened to be at those climate strikes is a little bit miffed about us not covering them, then by all means get in touch with the Surf Coast Times and we will. But my understanding was the central gathering point was in Geelong, and that's I guess why it pulled thousands of people.
Yeah, and did you actually go along and take some photos?
No, we sent our photographer Michael Chambers to take some pictures. It seemed like a very well organised affair. There was obviously a fairly large police presence, and that certainly escorted them around in relatively timely fashion. As I understand, there were no scuffles and no dust ups and no misbehaving of any kind. Just a lot of noise and a lot of signs.
And it sounds like it's going to be a very big council meeting in Geelong tonight, because they've got the climate emergency declaration as one of the items,
right.
But also you've got reforms to the budgetary process and also reactivating the MAL and all these other issues on the table. So it could be quite a late one if anyone's planning on going along tonight.
Yeah, listeners who can't make it into the council chambers in Geelong might want to try the live streaming option. And that's something that the Surf Coast Shire Council will be discussing tonight, actually, on their agenda. They're having their meeting tonight. And unfortunately, this is one of the occasions where I regret not being Doctor Who, in terms of being a master of space and time. I can't be in two places as much as I would like to be. But the Surf Coast Shire is, in fact, discussing on its agenda tonight the possibility of live streaming its council meetings too. So you could quite happily sit at home and be like the Mega Wall on Channel 7 and have both your council meetings streaming at once.
As a journo, you'd be pretty pro that, I'd imagine. More transparency, more public
participation. Yeah, I would say I'm generally in favour of transparency as opposed to not, and things being broadcast and open as opposed to not. There's obviously a cost involved, and that's got to be passed on somehow, so your rates may increase ever so marginally to actually pay for this, or the council will absorb it in their budget, however they decide to shake down the numbers. That's up to them. But in terms of making it accessible, I know that Torquay has almost half of the Surf Coast Shire's population and projected to have more than half in years to come, but it is still a long way if you live all the way out in Winchelsea or further out to come all the way in through a council meeting, especially in the middle of winter when it's freezing or it's hammering rain down here in Torquay. And I imagine that also applies in places like Geelong. If you live in somewhere like Lara, all the way down in Port Arlington or
Brimley.
Brimley, even, yeah, all the way in the outer reaches of the municipality, and you can't make it in, but you still want to keep tabs on what's happening, and you can read along with the agenda and watch what actually happens, and that's ultimately a good thing.
And I know that there's public questions at the council meetings. I wonder if they'll ever get to a point where they take questions via Skype or web questions.
I guess we see that on that ABC television program Q&A sometimes.
We do.
Where people have video questions, and that sometimes doesn't go very well because the questions always seem to be got your questions.
let's throw out Julian Assange.
That's one of those situations where maybe they can pre-vet the questions. I mean, live questions is a whole other thing because you've got to deal with the quality of connections going both ways, not just from the council end broadcasting it, but from the person that's asking the question sending it into the council meeting.
So what are the?
I guess that's the that might well be the ultimate goal, but that's a few years off yet, I think.
So what are some of the other developments down in Spring Creek? I said that there's been some talk about Spring Creek again and the town boundaries of Torquay.
Yeah, that was declared last week. Actually, you mentioned Darren Cheesman before. He got in touch to tell us that the state government has formally declared Torquay and Janjak area as a distinctive area and landscape. And the area that covers is actually quite big. It focuses on Torquay and Janjak, but it goes right along the coastline from the edge of the Great Otway National Park to the Brimley Flora and Fauna Reserve. And then it pushes all the way to the west, all the way to Bellbrae, and actually beyond Bellbrae. So it's not just when you talk about distinctive area and landscape, people might think, well, that just means the Torquay town boundaries, like the growth boundaries, but it's actually quite a large area that they're covering. And so that's been officially declared as distinctive as the state government said it would do in the lead up to the state election. And so now I think the state government has about, I think they've got 12 months to come up with some sort of planning document to say, okay, well, now it's been declared distinctive. This is what's going to happen in terms of what that actually means and what those protections actually stand for.
And Darren said again on the program this morning, no payments will be made to developers, or he doesn't expect there to be any issue there. So that's something we'll have to wait and see how it plays out. Have you heard anything about that?
No, I haven't. I know that that's been consistently his line for as long as the question has been raised, and I think that's been Daniel Andrews's line as well. That developers are more than welcome to sort of make the argument, the legal argument, I guess, and to haul the state government into court and say, well, this is what you said you were going to do and this is what you're doing instead. What gives? But I think the state government believes that they're on fairly solid grounds and they'll be fine with it. So that's the argument that they're running.
Something to leave us with? What's coming up in the Surf Coast Times this week?
Yeah, on the subject of local footy as opposed to AFL footy, actually, no question of footy, it's a question of netball, really. Listeners, might, readers of the Circus Science might have remembered our front page of last week where we had the girls from the Torquay's A-grade netball team who won the flag. And it was a very joyous occasion. We've got a great picture of them and holding up the cup, and they're very excited. And the patron at the time, I think she's definitely a member of the netball club. She might even be a life member of the club. Rose Hodge, Circus Shire Mayor, said that she would get a tattoo if the girls won the netball flag, and the girls won the netball flag, and so Rose Hodge has got a tattoo to honour the occasion. So we'll have some coverage of that.
Oh wow! What does the tattoo say? Is it?
I actually haven't seen the pictures yet. I've sent a man, Klaus Nansted, down there to cover the tattooing and the aftermath. I understand it all went very well, and there were no mistakes. But I actually haven't seen the pictures yet, and so I guess you'll be finding out along with the rest of the readers on Thursday.
It's not like an ancient Chinese set of symbols, or I don't know.
I don't think it's anything particularly elaborate or anything particularly large. I have a suspicion that Rose may have wanted to get a tattoo anyway. But hopefully, and this is probably the story that you'll tell. Hopefully, the incentive of the mayor getting a tattoo was the extra push that the girls needed to get over the line against Geelong Amateur.
Good on her. I mean, obviously, she's passionate about being mayor if she's willing to do that.
Yeah. As you said, Rose Hodge is one of those people that is absolutely talky through and through, so it entirely makes sense that she'd get a tattoo to honour such an occasion.
Well, James, thanks for being on the program. Always good to catch up. We'll do so again in 2 weeks' time.
Thanks, Mitchell.
Thank you very much. James Taylor joining us this morning. And apparently in 2 weeks' time, we're going to be broadcasting from a ferry travelling between Port Arlington and Melbourne. I'm not 100% sure how it's going to work out. Could go very well or not. But we're going to be doing that in 2 weeks' time. So that'll be the next time we speak to James.
The Mitchell's Front Page podcast is brought to you by Geelong Bank. Listen live on 94.7 The Pulse, Mondays and Tuesdays from 9 to 11. Or search for Mitchell's Front Page on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or wherever you get your podcasts.